Proverbs 3, 1 through 6. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commandments in your heart, for they will prolong your life for many years and bring you prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and men. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight.
As was mentioned in the bulletin, Joe is traveling, as well as Vicky, of course, is with him, and had a wedding to do in Kansas City last night. So having family in Kansas City, had a good place to spend the night, and was going to church this morning with some of the kids, and will be back here tonight. So in the interim, let's look at James chapter 3. Go ahead and be turning over there if you would, please. We're going to spend our time in James 3 this morning. But I wanted just to back up. Appreciate Mark and reading for us earlier from Proverbs chapter 3. And you know, as I was looking at the text, and sometimes you don't always pick out the verses that that maybe would have been best. And I should have went ahead and extended it through verse 7, especially the first part of that. Don't worry about turning there, but it simply says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." This morning we're going to look at the account that James gives on wisdom. We're going to pay particularly close attention to verses 13 through 18 of chapter 3. So please do turn to that text as we look at these thoughts this morning. The story is told of Charles Steinmetz, a great designer, and he designed the generators for Henry Ford's automobile plants, of course being several years ago. One day those generators ground to a halt. Now, I might say that's because it was Ford. Where's Jason Foss? He was at first service. But nonetheless, this was a Ford plant. Not one of the Ford engineers could get them up and running again. So Ford contacted Steinmetz, who had designed the generator to begin with, and he asked him for his help. Steinmetz came in to help him out. He tinkered just a little while, and then he threw the switch. Well, the entire operation jolted back to life. A short while later, a bill from Steinmetz passed through Ford's office. He opened up the bill, and it read $10,000. Well, Ford was a little taken back at this, and he asked for an itemized breakdown of the bill. So Steinmetz answered back and said, "For tinkering, $10. For knowing where to tinker, $9,990. So if you think of that story, in this case, the knowledge was invaluable. Just having that little bit of knowledge that Steinmetz had to know where to tinker to get that problem fixed. This morning we want to look back and see what Scripture says about wisdom. And often when we look at wisdom, we may think of knowledge. And we're going to look at the difference and sort of the comparisons, the contrast there. And probably you've already looked at this in your class time this morning. I hope that you were a part of classes this morning. I just want to take a moment and once again thank all of our teachers of all ages, but especially our adult teachers that have been looking at this throughout this quarter. John Lee has done an outstanding job in breaking it down. And I've been involved in the home builders class teaching with Mark Vigay. And Mark did an outstanding job this morning just looking at the heavenly versus the worldly, or the spiritual versus the earthly wisdom. We're going to take just a few minutes to expound on that this morning. When we think about knowledge, we have more knowledge today than at any time in history. Students, you know that, don't you? The books just get thicker every year, don't they? We have more knowledge. Things are just exponentially growing. More information has been produced in the last 30 years than in the previous hundreds and even thousands of years before that. So you think about that, 30 years compared to all the time before. More information in these last 30 years. Today, it's been estimated that information doubles every 4 years. If you think about that, that's probably pretty accurate. Maybe even sometimes when you buy that latest, greatest gadget, whether it's a phone, whatever it is, and you think, man, I've just got everything right here at my fingertips. 6 months, they come out with something better, don't they? Information is just everywhere. Knowledge is growing. Since the advent of the Internet, we have more knowledge at our fingertips than we've ever had before. I'll ask someone a question, they'll say, well, didn't you get on the Internet and look at that? I say, well, no, I just don't do that. But kids today, that's, you guys know more about a computer than I'll probably ever know. And it's just almost overwhelming, the amount of information and knowledge that we have. However, our world has plenty of knowledge and education, but it didn't necessarily bring along such wisdom. You know, in fact, wisdom can often be learned from the fairly uneducated. Take children, for instance, that are just learning, just growing. Patrick, at age 10, says, never trust a dog to watch your food. Pretty wise statement. Michael, at age 14, says, when your dad is mad and asks you, do I look stupid? Don't answer him. He also said about his mom, never tell your mom her diet's not working. Some pretty wise sayings. Randy, age 9, said, stay away from prunes. I'm not sure how he knew about prunes at age 9, but anyway. Lauren, at age 9, said, felt markers are not good to use as lipstick. Joel, 10 years old, said, don't pick on your sister when she's holding a baseball bat. And Eileen, at age 8, says, never try to baptize your cat. So, some pretty wise statements from some pretty uneducated kids, right? And you've heard kids make statements that you think, man, there's some wisdom there. And although there is much wisdom in what these children said, there's more wisdom, or more to wisdom than this. And of course, in fact, James' whole letter is an explanation about the purpose of trials of the life of a believer. He uses some very practical things. He says, guys and gals, this is what it's all about. This is what you're going to have to put up with as Christians. This is what you're going to have to endure. You know, a couple of weeks ago we looked at faith and deeds and the way those two work together and the faith that's shown through the deeds, the dynamic faith as we looked at 2 weeks back. And a lot of what we're looking at this morning following that same way of thinking. James begins talking about wisdom early on in the chapter. In fact, in chapter 1 and verse 5, the first time you'll notice wisdom mentioned, but James simply says, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. James chapter 1 and verse 5. James begins to deal with how to live our lives, and then in verse 13, he asks the question, who is wise and understanding among you? Who is wise? Think about that question this morning. We all like to be considered knowledgeable, wise, sort of knowing what's going on. We don't like to be thought of as uneducated folks who really don't have a clue as to what is happening. And he says, who is wise and understanding among you? No one wants to be seen as foolish or unwise. We all want to be perceived as intelligent and in the know. In fact, Proverbs talks about wisdom. You may have discussed that in your class this morning. We looked at James chapter 3 in the text there, but also possibly mentioning Proverbs chapter 3 and 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Just coincidental the way these have been broken down into chapters that all end up in chapter 3. The Proverbs reminds us, or the writings there in Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 4 says, to seek for wisdom as for hidden treasure. So it's something that we want. It's something we want to have. It's something that we can gain, especially if we look at the wisdom that James is speaking of here. As we begin to examine what James says about this subject, I think we need to be careful, as we mentioned earlier, and not confuse knowledge and wisdom. You know, during his retirement years, General Omar Bradley once remarked, the world has achieved brilliance without wisdom. I think maybe you see that sometimes, brilliance without wisdom. He's noticing that there's a vast difference between knowledge and wisdom. A story was once told of a minister, a Boy Scout, and a computer expert. They had all, for some reason, got on the same flight of a small plane, and there were just three seats on the plane except for that of the pilot. And as they were on their flight, they were just heading up, and all of a sudden the pilot came back to the cabin. He says, we've got some real problems here. My engine shut down. And he says, the bigger problem than that is there's four of us on the plane and I only have three parachutes. So he went ahead and to look at the situation. He said, since I'm the pilot and I've got three small kids at home, I think I need to go ahead and take the first parachute. He did that and jumped out. Well, immediately the expert computer analyst, he spoke up and he said, I'm a genius. I just have so much knowledge, I can't afford to go down with this plane. I can really do a lot for the folks in my years to come. So he grabbed the second and jumped out. Well, that left the minister and the Boy Scout. And the minister came up to the Boy Scout with sort of a long face. And he said, "Well, I've had a lot of good years here on this earth, so you go ahead and take that third parachute and I'll go down with the plane." Well, the Boy Scout looked back up and said, "Mister, relax. The smartest man in the world just picked up my knapsack and jumped out." You may have heard that story, and that points out that sometimes we get the two confused. The expert, you know, the computer person that just had all the knowledge in the world, picked up the knapsack. And as we go through here, let's not confuse the two. Knowledge is good. I encourage knowledge. Kids, you have a great opportunity to learn. Continue to do that. Not kids, young people. We don't want to call them kids, do we, Bryce? They're young people, and they're the presence of the church, not only the future. But continue your studies. Continue learning. But yet at the same time, learn the wisdom that James is talking about here. There's still a tendency to equate wisdom with intelligence, titles, and degrees. Knowledge is the accumulation of facts, but wisdom is moral insight with understanding about practical application. Wisdom is measured not by degrees acquired, but by deeds accomplished. Let's go ahead and read from our text there in James chapter 3, beginning at verse 13. May have been the second or third time you've heard it this morning, but let's read it once again, beginning at verse 13. "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness." One of the things that he mentions there is humility and how humility plays into all of this. And Joe will be looking at that specifically tonight. So I encourage you to be back. And here, as Joe talks about this, we'll have our service, of course, tonight at 6 o'clock. So be back and be a part of that. According there in verse 13, our lifestyle will be the leading indicator of the level and source of our wisdom. Again, he asks the question, "Who is wise and knowing among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done, and the humility that comes from wisdom." And if you notice, James here is talking about two different kinds of wisdom. I'm sure you talked about that in your class this morning. There's nothing hard about that. Nothing difficult to understand, yet so practical. Such a part of our everyday life. And in fact, if you look at wisdom, and you may have mentioned this in class, or it may have been mentioned as well, but Proverbs chapter 3, sort of giving some roots of wisdom. Then 1 Corinthians 3, the trunk of the tree, if you looked at the tree analogy. But James chapter 3 talks about the fruit, the produce. That's what matters. That's what is important. James is saying, here is what it is. Here's wisdom. James tells that there are the two kinds of wisdom. First, he talks of the worldly wisdom. And in verse 15, says, "Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil." This type of wisdom is earthly as opposed to heavenly. Its standards and sources are earthly. It measures success in worldly terms, and its aims, are worldly aims. Sort of the wisdom you might think about when someone talks about being wise. That's just what we think about. You know, that's a wise person. Well, they're going to do great things here on this earth. That's a smart individual. He's going to go far in his job, in his career. He's going to climb that ladder to success. Well, along with that climbing, how many people have been stepped on? How many people have been hurt? The worldly wisdom doesn't take that into consideration. According to James, this is a type of wisdom that is characteristic of the unsaved individual. And in fact, if you look at the Greek, James is equating this wisdom with that of an animal. He's saying that this wrong type of wisdom is not more than an animal sort of thing. It's the wisdom that makes the animal snap or snarl and only care about his survival. You see how that translates into our life sometimes? Only caring about number one, numero uno. Doesn't matter about anything else. Worldly wisdom. That's what James is talking about here. Verse 16 says this kind of wisdom produces trouble. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Pretty plain put. But then he also talks about the heavenly wisdom. Verse 17, he says, "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial, and sincere." Talking about that heavenly wisdom, that's what I want to spend the remainder of our time on this morning. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you live your life with certainty or with confusion? Are you sure of what is right and what is wrong? Is there anything today that does not change? And instead of black and white, does everything seem gray? And is the line of distinction blurred? Sometimes that's the case, isn't it? Things get a little bit blurry. Things get a little bit out of focus. What was black and white maybe has become gray. Yet Scripture hasn't changed. James says, hey, here's the way it is. Here's the black. Here's the white. Here's the earthly wisdom. Here's the heavenly wisdom. Which are you a part of? Seems so simple when we look at it in this particular light. There may be some here today that this describes your life. And there is a constant question of how to live your life because nothing is consistent or feels right. So many times we take that methodology, if it feels good, do it. Be all you can be. Are there really absolutes? I think James talks about some absolutes here. He talks about real wisdom. He says real wisdom is this. And then he lists some things. When we read through this list, think about your life. I'm thinking about mine. I ask you to do the same. Is this what describes your life? Is this what describes the wisdom that you show through your deeds, through the life that you're living? Number one, in verse 17 and 18 is where we want to spend the rest of our time this morning. But he says, first of all, real wisdom begins with a pure life. There in verse 17 he says, "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure." James says that true wisdom is pure, which simply means free of defilement or free from defilement. You may remember last week we talked about the tongue and how the tongue can defile. The Greek, it simply means without a flaw, pure enough to approach God. Think about that for just a minute. You know, we come together on Sunday morning. We've got our best attire on. We put on a necktie or we put on our dress and we come and just give our best to God. And thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here this morning. That means so much to see people that have gathered together to worship together on Sunday morning. But you know, when we come together, are we being honest with ourselves? What type of life are we living? Are we kidding ourselves? Are we living that pure life that would be pure enough to approach God? About that for just a minute. Purity, a big part of the Christian life. Real wisdom is being so cleansed of all ulterior motives and of self that it has become pure enough to see God. Is your life pure this morning as a Christian? Secondly, real wisdom is characterized by the desire to get along with others. Several of you enjoy the Peanuts cartoon, and you may have seen the one that talked about Charlie Brown is visiting with Lucy, and Lucy says, "I hate everything. I hate everybody. I hate the whole wide world." Charlie Brown says, "But I thought you had inner peace." Lucy replies, "I do have inner peace, but I still have outer obnoxiousness." Does that sometimes describe our life? We think that we have the inner peace. We profess to have that inner peace, yet outwardly, those two need to match up. Those two need to coincide. If we're going to have peace, we must first realize that true peace is not possible until we've experienced the peace of God. Romans chapter 5 and verse 1, "Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ." And then having established the peace with God, we need to pursue peace with our fellow man. You may say, Dwight, that's easier said than done. That's easier said than done, and at times, yes, it is. And I think so many times when we talk about peace, we say, well, does that mean I just have to always give in? Do I have to be the one backing off or the one saying, okay, you just have it your way? I think that's what Jesus is talking about when he prays that prayer in John 17. He says, "I pray that you all will be unified. Be as me and my Father are. Be at one with one another." We need to make peace our goal. Verse 18 says, "Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. And so often we're like the man who was celebrating his 50th wedding anniversary. And someone came up to the man and he said, "What are your secrets of marital bliss? Or what are some of the things that you did during your marriage?" "Well," the old man replied, "my wife and I had an agreement when we first got married. And it went something like this. When something bothered her, she would just simply spout it out and get it off her chest, and I would listen to it. Then when something bothered me, or when I got mad at her about something, I would just go outside and take a long walk and sort of just let it die down that way." And then he summed it up by saying, "I suppose you could attribute our happy marriage to the fact that I've largely led an outdoor life." And I think that's what we think when we think of being peaceful. The giving in. We're working for the same thing, aren't we? We're working in the same direction. We have the same goal. Let's look to that goal. Get over some of the small things that come our way. And try to live peacefully with one another. Number three, and still there in verse 17, real wisdom is living with tender consideration for others. And your version may say something like considerate or gentle there in verse 17. And it's impossible to find an English word that translates this quality exactly. Matthew Arnold called it sweet reasonableness. And it's the ability to extend to others the kindly consideration that we would wish to have extended to us or to receive ourselves. That sounds something like we've been taught from a pretty early age, isn't it? Do unto others. Tender consideration for others. You know, it's hard to think of others when you're only thinking of self. We all deal with this. We have the pity parties. We're concerned about self and sometimes fail to look to others. And as Christians, we're called to love and to care for one another. Going on, number four, it says real wisdom is always teachable. The verse there, depending on your version, may say submissive, which means willing to yield. And the way that the word is used here in this context has to do with our openness and our teachability. So often we're sort of closed-minded. We think, "Hey, I've got it all right. Hey, I know exactly what is going on here. I know what this Christian life's all about." We need to be open-minded, teachable, submissive, willing to listen to others, willing to hear others. Sticking to the truth, never wavering, yet loving, considerate. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice." Going on there in verse 17, real wisdom is a life controlled by mercy. It uses the phrase "full of mercy and good fruits." James says that we're to be full of or controlled by mercy. Luke chapter 6 and verse 36 says, "Therefore, be merciful just as your Father also is merciful." You know, the kind of mercy that's being described here is not just for the man who is in trouble, but it means to be merciful to the one who is in trouble, even if the trouble is not his own fault, or excuse me, is his own fault. Mercy is not dependent on guilt or innocence. And so often we find it easy to love someone or to show mercy, to be merciful to the one we believe who is suffering unjustly. But God is merciful even though we were guilty. Luke 6:36, "Just as your Father also is merciful." Christ dying for a lost world, a guilty world, yet willing to show that mercy. And also James, by his use of the word "fruit" here in this verse, reminds us that righteousness is not produced by the believer, but rather it's produced in the believer. I think that's something we should consider as well. Righteousness being produced in the believer. And then finally, there in verse 17, real wisdom is characterized by sincerity. If you look at the last part of that, as I was reading from the New International, it says impartial and sincere. I think here we're not just told to act as if we're not prejudiced. We're to be sincere. True wisdom is without hypocrisy. And that is to say, it's not opposed, and it does not deal in deception. It's honest. It never pretends to be something that it is not, and it never acts to gain its own ends. True wisdom, heavenly wisdom, spiritual wisdom, lists several things there in that verse. Our lives should be showing this if we really want to be wise in the eyes of God. In the Bible, we're told of a story of how God came to Solomon and told him to give him anything that he desired. You've read this story. It's recorded back in 2 Chronicles chapter 1. He could have riches, could have power, to have prestige? Think about if someone came and offered you those things. What would the answer be? There in chapter 1, also in verses 8 and 10, we see Solomon's request was that he was to be, or he wanted more wisdom. He wanted to be wise. And Solomon, to hide of his spiritual power, wrote in Proverbs 1 and verse 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We're to be wise. We're to strive for that wisdom. It talks about the things that we just looked at. The pure life. The desire to get along with others. The consideration that we have for others. Being teachable. Being merciful. Being sincere in what we do. I want to challenge you this week to think about just one of these six things. Think about purity. The pure life. Living a life that is pure. A life that is whole. A life that is pure enough to stand before God when everything will be open. We can fool folks here. God sees all. And that's what we need to keep in the forefront of our mind. What about wisdom? What about knowledge? We always want to gain knowledge. We want to become more understanding at all times. Yet wisdom is something that we can work on. Something that we can all strive to do better in our lives. We can strive for more wisdom. You may have heard the saying, and I'm not sure who to attribute this to, but I think it's very correct. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And think about that, the list that we looked at, those six things. That's showing how much you care for someone, isn't it? Showing how much you're concerned about them in the life that you're striving to live. It involves other people. We're in this together. The question I'll ask you this morning as I ask myself is, are you wise? According to James' list. Are you wise according to the list that we've looked at? At first service, we had the opportunity to pray for a gentleman. A gentleman on up in years, as we would think about our life here on this earth. And I thought it was so neat to see his son and his grandson sitting by his side. You know, it shows me that some wisdom has been passed on. And although this gentleman came forward saying, I want your prayers. I want my faith to strengthen. I want to be encouraged. Obviously, he had passed some of this along to his family. That's what it's all about. Fathers, are you wise this morning? Mothers, are you wise? Young people, don't let anyone overestimate your wisdom. You can be wise beyond your years. I think so often when we think of wisdom, we think of the old gray-haired sage that's sitting there in the rocking chair or relaxing and saying, hey, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. I've lived this. I've learned from this. I now do things differently than maybe I once did. We can all strive to be more wise, as James records for us here in this particular writing. The invitation is open to you this morning. You may not have put on Christ through baptism. You've heard God's Word and you believe what it says. That's number one. That's where we start, in the belief. And then you're willing to change this morning or repent, confess Jesus Christ, and be baptized. Come up a new person, a saved individual, a cleansed individual, a pure life. Sometimes as we walk that Christian life, things enter in. That may be your situation this morning. You may just simply want, like Jack came forward this morning saying, I want prayers for my Christian walk. We would love to do that with you this morning. If you're subject to that invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?